My name is Helene Baker. Our first visit to Holden, along with my husband Paul, was in 2011, and we had, 2001, sorry. We had the unique experience of being here during 9/11, and in those days there was almost no communication with the outside world, so we didn't even know about it for several hours. And when we did, we all paused and prayed, and then within 10 or 15 minutes, it was back to our duties. There was none of the, hysteria or watching television for day after day after day. And who knows whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, but that's the way Holden was in those, in 2001. And then the next year, we brought our grandsons for the first time, and they were 9 and 12. And through the years, they've continued to come with us. We've come every summer for the last 10 or 11 years, and sometimes in the fall also. And now the younger grandson is 20 years old, and he is a kind of full-fledged staff member here. His name is Dale Smith, and so maybe some years down the road, Dale will read this or hear this and know that Holden loved him a lot for coming and staying months at a time and being very good at what he did. Thank you.
Can you say just a little bit more about what happened on September 11th and the later that week?
When we found out about 9/11, a day or so later, a VCR, which people in the future won't even know what that was, they almost don't know now, came up on the boat, and we were able to watch that. But again, it was a case of us not spending hours watching it, just a brief few minutes and then back to work. And then I believe it was 2 days later or three, we got some two-day-old newspapers with pictures of the events. And
was there any kind of special worship? Or
yes. After the fact, we did have special services in the evening and all, but the initial moments were pray and brief, and then back to what we should be doing, very sorrowfully, of course, but there was really nothing we could do to help anybody or even contact anybody or even know if, certain people would have known if possibly their families were involved, but that was the way it was. So, thank you.
I'm Karen Thomas from Bothell, Washington, and I had heard glimmers of Holden all my Lutheran life, but had really never visited. And then our church in Bothell has several people who have been highly involved with Holden over the years. So 3 years ago, I made my first visit with my husband. And I regret that I came to Holden late in life, but we loved it so much that we bring our daughter-in-law and our grandchildren. We're all here together this visit. This is our third visit. The thing about Holden that just strikes me is my love at first sight. When the bus rounds that little corner and you go past Narnia and you know you've arrived, I'm just overwhelmed every time I've come. And the bus is coming and going. I get teary every time I go down to wave the buses goodbye or when I've been greeted. And I've been continually impressed at Holden, the sense of community. It's like an amoeba. It absorbs and people come and people go, but the community is consistent. And the gift that Holden provides is that ongoing community, which to me is just, I can't even come up with the words to really describe how important those buses coming and going are to me.
Do you remember what was going on the lawn your first time when you got off the bus?
Rounding the corner, people out there waving, greeting us, clapping. I just hadn't expected. I remember coming off the bus, turning to my friend Nora Strothman, who is a longtime Holden supporter, and saying, I love this place.
That's great. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm Robert Hewitt. I'm from Duluth, Minnesota, and I have a history with Holden Village going back to 1969. And it's interesting that last Monday at 4 p.m., there was a story given in Koinonia Fireside by a name of from a fellow from a company called Manrock. Manrock is doing the close up of the old mine at this time in the remediation project. And a fellow by the name of Les Berry made a little over an hour presentation of the history of the old mine and also how they're proceeding as far as closing up the old facility. Anyway, after the presentation, I had a chance to talk to him, and I asked him if he was aware of the flood of 1977 that the mine was involved with. And no one had ever mentioned that to him. And you had not either?
No.
Okay. What had happened over a period of years that the mine's been abandoned, and he showed some pictures of landslide materials that came down from up above the mine and affected the entrances into it. Sometime in 1976, a fairly major landslide occurred, and it really sealed up the entrance to the mine. Yeah. Subsequently, what happened was that over a period of time, nobody knows for sure exactly how deep the water was, but water built up inside the mine. And in the spring of 77, the pressure of the water against all the debris that had fallen into the entrance of the mine gave way, and a wall of water came rushing out of the mine, and with it went lots of rocks, timbers, and other debris from inside the mine. It washed out the road pretty well up by the mine, and it also removed a big channel in the tail. Because of this, the Forest Service was very concerned about the fact that something like this happened. It was very devastating to the area around the entrance area of the mine, and they were wondering if it would happen again. So they decided to talk to the head of the geology department at UW, and subsequently they decided to have a group of three people go into the mine to spend some time and do some investigation to see exactly if they could formulate enough opinion to determine if this could ever happen again. So the head geologist from UW was part of that three-person team. Another person was the local Forest Service officer, supervisor. And a third person was asked to come from Holden Village, and Woodrow Jensen and Carol Hinderly asked me, Robert Hewitt, if I would be the person from Holden to go into the mine. And I did. And they said that they asked me principally because I'm an architect. And they had maps of the layout of the different levels of the mine, but they thought it would be an asset for me to go in there and help figure out where everything was located as we proceeded into the depths of the mine. So we went in, and Winter took us up to the mine one night about 10 o'clock. We wanted to do this kind of incognito. And we then proceeded to meet then. I think we planned to meet back at 5 in the morning. And the entrance into the mine, there was a channel of water coming through the mine. So we figured that we could probably work our way back through all the fallen timbers and stones and other debris and eventually get into a dry area of the mine. We probably spent an hour working our way through all the timbers. Quite a bit was done underwater and trying to feel our way to find another opening, and then little by little we worked our way through all this debris and until we got to dry land. Once we got into dry land, we had wrapped a change of clothes in our packs that we carried with us, along with their acetylene lamps and some flashlights, maps, and other emergency gear that we thought we might need. And then we changing to dry clothes because the temperature inside the mine is around 50 degrees. So it can get a little chilly to the bones if you got wet clothes on. Yeah. So we then proceeded to start working our way in different directions. And it was interesting that that the ladders that went up to different levels, keep in mind now, everything below that level was still full of water. And couldn't go down, but we could go up. And so we did go up to another level, which is about 200 feet above the first level. And that level then had evidences of some water in it. We suspect that the water inside the entire maze of tunnels and stuff may have gotten up close to the second level, but probably never into the level right up 200 feet above the main level. But considering that we did find rooms back on the main level that were as big as a football field and 200 feet high, that we suspected that the water could have gotten as high as 200 feet in all these areas on the main level and eventually just had enough pressure to break open the opening. We did find in the mine a lot of interesting artifacts. Railroad cars were still in there. There was also lockers, tables. Tables still had lunch boxes on them. Yeah. In the lockers, people still had clothing that was hung up in the lockers, and and a lot of memories of personal things that people had left behind. We did finally make it back out of the mine, probably around 5 in the morning, and I did have a camera with me back then. We didn't have a lot of high-tech equipment with us, but I used my Olympus camera and some 400 ASA film, black and white film, to take some pictures inside there. Back in 2004, I gave those pictures, the black and white pictures, prints that I had, to Holden through Paul and Carol Hinderly, and suggested that they be left in the historical archives of Holden. And I still have the old negatives. So I think I'll try and see if I can find somebody that still does black and white prints and get some more copies made of the pictures inside the mine. But anyway, I mentioned this story to Les from Manrock, and he said, "No, I was not aware of the flood, but this answers a lot of questions, because as we were taking our heavy equipment and excavating out the entrance to the tunnel, we were encountering things we never expected, like utensils, plates, pots, and shovels and stuff that were just helter-skeltered all over the place. Now that makes sense." Yeah. Yeah, it is a fascinating story, but he was just fascinated by hearing this account of what happened to the old mine back in the mid-70s.
Great to hear that, because I'd never heard that before. That's a pretty amazing event to happen up there, and a reason why they need to do what they're doing right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Great.
All right.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Lee Peterson. I was Jennifer Lee when I was here, but I actually came to Holden accidentally. I came to visit my friend Amy Connor, who was a teaching assistant that year, heading into her year teaching here, and came up for a 3-week, to work for 3 weeks, and promptly realized that I didn't want to leave. So this was in 1988, September of 88. And so tried to figure out how I could stay. I enrolled in the winter sojourn program that fall, and again realized I wasn't ready to leave yet, so became head housekeeper through the next summer of 89. And I mean, I have so many memories, of course, but I think part of my initial experience was just feeling so cradled by the mountains. And my first hike was up to Copper Basin. Somebody said, "This is your orientation hike. This is the one to do." So hiked up there, and it was September, so, and I remember just being so amazed by how the, all the different sagey greens, the larches, and the lichen up in the in that basin. So, I just felt like that was it. Really crystallized for me that I was home in a big way. So, some of my other memories. I was actually talking earlier with someone about. Most of our staff meetings revolved around decisions about requiring outs, because up to that time there wasn't a time frame. So there were people that had been up here, you know, for over a year without having left the village. So there were concerns that people were maybe having issues of separation or, you know, re-entry. So and I hadn't been here for very long, but I went out that Christmas, and I remember being on the highway coming into town and seeing billboards for the first time, and just being completely blown away by the re-entry into culture, and that it just seemed like I've traveled many, many countries, and I felt like I was in a foreign land again. So it all became very clear to me that the outs had become critical to people being able to identify with where they were headed and not have anxieties about leaving Alden. So that was a big part of the discussions in terms of staff. But I just remember also appreciating the solitude that I had here. I was 23, so I was at a point, you know, and I look around and see a lot of the staff at that age and find myself wanting to engage with them and sort of identify where they are. And I mean, I almost wish that I had more awareness of how far into my life the experience would carry me and how I'd be impacted by it. But I just think that the treasure of what we have at Holden, really, and to be able to bring my kids here has just been fantastic. Because, you know, I don't think people, you can't really explain Holden, you know. We have other friends who talk about, oh, you get to go to Holden, oh, it's going to be great. But they still were a little wary of, you know, what, I don't understand. And so it really wasn't until they, and of course the journey is so long, you know, you just think, when are we going to get there? But as soon as they got here, you could just see that light bulb click on. And, you know, then within 12 hours, can we stay longer? Why do we have to leave? So they're definitely, they've drunk the water and are definitely looking forward to finding ways. I mean, they were disappointed to find out that the remediation project would limit our summer visits a little bit. So they're looking forward to that return later. But yeah, thank you.
In terms of regular guests outside of the construction season.
Right.
Some families will get creative and come other times, but it's hard to.
Right, yeah.
And then summers, it's going to be more work camp.
Right. Yeah, I did come for Christmas one year, and it was really, winter is really magical. I had never cross-country skied before I came to Holden. Bought a pair of used skis when I was on an out, and spent the whole winter again just in that space of, and I also remember watching, we were given an avalanche orientation session, and I remember that there, it's probably the same one that's used now, but I remember the film, you know, said, it was a beautiful day, nothing could go wrong. So we would always, whenever we were out on our skis, we'd say, it was a beautiful day. I mean, of course, we were safe and wouldn't go far, but that was always, it was true, it was a beautiful day. So, yeah, thank you.
I'm Monty Mieland, Monty, short for Monghild. My husband and I first came to Holden in 1977, and we were encouraged by our friends Tom and Darlene Carlson, who just raved about it. Well, we came with a one-year-old and a three-year-old, boys, and by ourselves. In those days, some of the things that might interest you is that the playground was not like it is today. There was this big kind of a cliff-like hill that went down to where the pottery was being made, and it was kind of dangerous, so we always stayed with the kids. And later on, we just marveled at how that had all been fixed up. Another thing that might interest you is that Koinonia was the place for families with little ones like we had. So if there was one crying little guy, there were others too. And the neat part about it was that mothers could watch their baby sleeping on the floor and listen to a lecture. The funny story that I have to share was the day Larry went up on a hike, Heart Lake was his favorite to fish in. I was in Koinonia listening to a high-level child psychologist, and as a mother with little ones, that just fit me. Mark, the one-year-old, was asleep on the carpet, and David, our very active three-year-old, spotted the little shed that says hotel on it. Well, David, I was told that everybody watches out for kids at Holden. So I sat by the window, and David went over there. David was a lock picker. In fact, he picked the lock of the bathroom one time when I was in the tub and said, "Don't you got any boats in there?" So we knew that that would occupy David. I knew, anyway. So David was picking away, and I knew he couldn't get that lock open. After listening to a very fine child psychologist who said that everybody looks out for everybody's kids in the village, along came a guy walking along the dusty road and toward David, and I thought, I better get out there. You know, most parents might not let their kids pick locks. So as I was going out, I heard the carpenter say, "Hey, kid, get away from there. There's a bear inside." Well, that was real interesting. And of course, David did move away. And for the rest of our 3 days at Holden, he assured everyone that there's a bear inside the little hotel shed, so be sure and stay away from it. That was the early period, and it was kind of a weary time because Mark was teething, and we wondered about Holden Village. But 2 years later, we came with friends, and we've been coming ever since. I really enjoy doing the work weeks. Spring, summer work camp is good too. So I see it in different perspectives. One of the things that's kind of fun is that I put the rocks down for one of the walkways at the chalets. So there's so many different things about Holden. The beauty is here. The word is here. The people are here. The mountains, hey, you can't beat Holden Village. And I intend to be back for fall work week. And Larry, well, I bet he'll keep fishing.
Great. Thank you very much. I'm trying to picture that, what the village would be like without the playground we have right now.
Yeah, it's fantastic playground compared to what it was. Really kind of scary, because it went right down to where they were doing the pottery, and there's a kiln there. And so, you know, we were very careful. Yes?
Well, I remember people talking in the 60s about kids playing over on the tailings before they really knew. Oh, you can still.
And the little.
We have till 11, so. She's going to tell one more.
Also the little pond. Yeah.
No, quite.
No, you know, I kind of worried about it. Yeah. But you can't
So Jennifer Lee Peterson, and I'm actually from Seattle now. And in 1988-89, I think both summers, we would go to the tailings to fly kites. I was a stunt kite flyer. I had one of those ones where you use two hands. And we would, there were about four of us that had kites, so we would go up and fly our kites. And I remember coming to the edge of the top layer of the tailings, and you would still be working on flying your kite, and when you got to the edge, we would just slide right down, you know, tailings and all, just covered in orange. But that's, I mean, we did that regularly. No, I mean, knowing that obviously it wasn't the healthiest of environments, but it was the only place you could really fly kites to that extent. So I actually have pictures of that. So I have pictured in my head. So yeah, exactly. Skiing, basically, that's what we were doing down the slope.